You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs kicking off hour number two on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline with the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, good to be with you. I want to make an opening statement to you.
Go ahead. I like it. He's got some prepared words.
I thoroughly enjoyed your show maybe about a week ago. I was listening, and when you had Bill Polian on,
though it was a
short interview, it was a terrific interview because Bill, I love listening to Bill Polian, but I sit back and I say to myself, Bill Polian truly represents the establishment, the old guard of the NFL, who really are perplexed as they watch and see what the Cleveland Browns have done with the new reorganization of their front office and maybe leaning towards this era of analytics. And I know that they don't buy into it yet, but they definitely have to pay attention to it. And they're very, very interested, and whether they're pessimistic or optimistic of it, and Bill sounded a little pessimistic of it,
he did,
about how the new era, if this thing takes off, how it will change the old guard of the NFL. And it was really interesting to hear the differences of opinion there.
Yeah, it clearly represents that old guard. Now, the other guy who also does is Pat Kerwin, who had been anything but favorable on the Browns
right. The
entire offseason, but actually was pretty positive post-draft with what the Browns were able to accomplish there.
Right.
I'm glad you brought up Bill Polian, because one of our topics today was, you know, is too much being placed on Hugh Jackson to be solely responsible for this turnaround? How much of it's on the players? How much of it is on the personnel department to get in the players? And how much is on Hugh? And Matt asked Bill Polian in that interview, you know, how many wins can a coach,
right,
you know, what kind of a difference can he make? He said zero, none. It's all about personnel, which I don't personally agree with, but I thought was an interesting take, to say the least.
Yeah, it really was. And I remember him, alluding to that. You know, what I saw yesterday when I was out watching the OTA practice was a totally, obviously, and it just, you know, bangs you right in the nose when you walk in and watch the Browns work now. The obvious difference in tempo and the excitement level. And I think that you're watching players buzz around. And when you reflect back on certainly last year, especially when I would walk in and watch them practice, and especially during training camp, and the pace was really always in a walkthrough type of speed, which is not fast. But I watched it yesterday, and people were buzzing around, and Hugh Jackson's buzzing around, and his staff is buzzing around. And it seems as though everybody realizes that there's a lot of work to be done, and it is. I mean, it is work, and it's a game to be played at a certain speed, and you need to, I think, the best way to get to that game speed is to do it in practice, too. And that was very, very... It hit me very quickly as I watched them yesterday.
And Jim, do you believe that, you know, strides will hopefully be taken because of Hugh Jackson and the culture change and the emphasis on coaching this young team in 2016? But as Sashi Brown accumulates more and more talent and this staff then gets their hands on it, that the best is really yet to come for Hugh Jackson in years, hopefully, you know, well beyond just 2016?
Yeah, I do, Matt, and I listened to Hugh yesterday after the practice when he met with the media, and I would think that this has to be a very, very exciting situation for him, not only to just be a head coach again, but to really get a grassroots type of team that is really going to be young. I mean, this team is going to be young. He's going to have a lot of young players who are all going to hopefully grow up at the same time.
Right.
And they're all going to be very, very early on at the beginning of their NFL careers influenced by Hugh Jackson. He's truly going to be able to put his stamp on this team. It's not like he's walking in to a situation where he has a veteran team that's done it a certain way for a number of years and through those players' careers, and now he's going to have to kind of give in to their system but try and introduce his system. I mean, I think you have a couple of different factions with the Browns. You have a lot of young players who are eager to make their way into the NFL. And as we watch their trail and their descriptions of how they played in college and in their careers, they've all been described as guys that have overachieved in a lot of ways, but because they've overachieved, they've made themselves NFL quality players, hopefully. And they're all described as really having, you know, good motors, as we say in football talk. And then I think you have a group of, you know, remaining veteran players who are here and are tired of losing and saying, hey, listen, whatever it takes, let's get this thing going in the right direction. And then I think you have a coaching staff that should be very excited, because I would think it would be very exciting to get young players and to be able to teach them your way right from the outset and not have to, you know, undo things that have been done here for a number of years.
I totally agree with that. What did you make of Joe Hayden's comment that in all of his time in Cleveland, that Hugh Jackson is the best thing that's ever happened to the Browns?
Yes, that was very interesting. And again, I think that that's, you know, going back to what I just said, I think that that's part of that faction in the in that locker room and with this team that is saying, hey, listen, I really want to win. So, I'm tired of this. Joe seemed, you know, frustrated when he described what went on last year.
Yeah.
You know, guys whispering and talking about things that they shouldn't have been talking about, and you know, using energy on that rather than on being a better football team. And so I think that, and the other thing, you know, Nathan, is that, you know, a guy like Joe Hayden and guys that are living in the city right now are catching on to the excitement and the electricity that's going on over at the Q with the Cavaliers. And they say, hey, listen, that's great, as Joe put it yesterday, but imagine what it would be like if the Cleveland Browns got it going in the right direction, how this town would be, not just hopefully in the playoffs, but week to week and day to day. I mean, for those that can remember when the Browns were, you know, a big factor in the AFC, I mean, time flies when you're winning, and it's a lot of fun. And I think they want to get a taste of that. So I really, you know, what Joe said yesterday was very revealing, and I think it's, I don't think it's just individual to Joe. I think it spreads across, whether it's young player, veteran player, or a guy that's only been here a couple of years that's trying to hang on here. I think they realize that there's an energy with this coach, and really, indeed, a different way of playing, and I think it's more acceptable to the way these guys want to do it.
I agree, Jim. And again, you were out at OTA practice yesterday. Was there any rookie or two that stood out in your eyes with such a large class?
Well, the kid Schobert made a great play on a tip ball that he intercepted and took back. He made a great play. I will say this. It just seems as though that wide receiver class and you know, the entire room of wide receivers, that is going to be a very, very competitive group, because they are introducing so many players that they went out and got in the draft, and then you have the returning players here. And I think that that's going to be certainly a position that we all hope is upgraded, and we think that it's on its way to being that way. And I think that's going to be a really, really competitive situation as we get into the pads in July and then play those preseason games. That's going to be one, you know, that's going to be a position that we'll get a lot of look to and hopefully a lot of production out of. But I think the competitiveness will make that a very exciting thing to watch in the upcoming month or so.
What have you thought of RG3, both on and off the field, in his short time here in Cleveland?
Well, I think on the field, I mean, you know, it seems as though he's working really hard, and I think that, you know, he's like these young players that are saying, hey, listen, when I made the decision to come to Cleveland, I realized that Hugh Jackson has a touch with quarterbacks, and I want that touch. I mean, this is a guy that I think is very anxious, Nathan, to get his career back.
Yes.
And not be termed any longer as a broken quarterback, a guy that really got broken spirit-wise and certainly physically in Washington. And he wants to get his career going again, and he thinks he's with the right guy to do it. So I think that he's soaking up everything he possibly can on the field and off the field with this coaching staff and this and trying to make this thing work. So I think he's a very, very open-minded, eager guy. Now, in the, you know, when he off the field with the media, I mean, he's very smooth, and he certainly has the qualities and the talk of a leader. And of course, then the biggest part of that is, can you do it on the field and make everybody go in the same direction and in the right way? And I know he just seems to be very intent on trying to do anything and everything to get it in the right direction again for himself personally.
Yeah, I've said many times, I don't know if he can play. Obviously, you know, he's got a lot of talent, but I truly believe you're going to see the best of Robert Griffin III, and that he's going to give everything he can to turn it around, and Hugh and Pep and the staff are going to do everything they can to get the best out of him. And we'll find out. I think we'll have a pretty good idea at the end of this year if Robert Griffin III can be that kind of quarterback for you in the National Football League.
Yeah, and you know, when you guys are talking, you know, with Sashi Brown and these and Andrew Berry and these people, and they have really set that situation up with Robert Griffin III very, very well. I mean, ideally, team friendly, and certainly for Griffin, you know, a great opportunity to come in with a good head coach that certainly knows the position and a team that really is going to give him an opportunity to go in and play and lead and hopefully reclaim his position as an exciting NFL quarterback. But, you know, when they describe that situation about, hey, listen, he could be a bridge quarterback, but, I mean, he could be the quarterback for the future. But, you know, we're going to let it all play out. If it turns around on the best way and he is, kind of a comeback of the year type guy and really shows us that he's got a future here, then, yeah, we would talk about a long-term deal with him. But I think they've set the situation for themselves up really well. I mean, the whole thing looks so organized right now, including the draft next year and in some ways the draft the year after that, that it's really playing well for them, that they obviously, and I keep saying this to you guys and anyone that asks, they obviously have a plan and they're going through with the plan. And that's the most comforting thing that we can take from it all right now until we see it out on the field as it starts to play out that way.
That's absolutely right. And Jim, we're going to hear shortly after you joining us from Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson, two running backs going to be a big part of that offense. What have you seen in the way that Hugh Jackson's going to use them and your expectations for them alongside RG3 this year?
Well, first of all, Matt, the two guys looked thoroughly thrilled that they were together and on the field and that the Browns did not draft a running back. I mean, it seemed to immediately – you know, show a boost in confidence for both guys that I'm sure they evaluated every position and said to themselves, hey, listen, we're okay with these guys. And, I mean, they've come out and said that. I mean, these guys can get it done for us. And that's a real shot in the arm for players who were coming off of a season, and certainly Crowell more so than Duke Johnson, because Johnson was a rookie and he did a lot of good things, I thought, last year, certainly receiving the football. But neither one of them got a chance really to run the football because there was a total lack of commitment to that and a lack of patience with it in the Browns offense. But I'll tell you what, Matt, when I looked at them yesterday, and this might be a reach, but we're all into the Believe Land, the postmortem on the Believe Land film, and that is that the two of them up there yesterday seemed very comfortable with each other, and I remember the days of Mack and Beiner. And Mack and Beiner had a great deal of comfort with each other and a loyalty to each other. And yesterday, for the 15 minutes that the two, Crowell and Duke Johnson, were sitting in front of the media, I saw that with those two guys, that there's a tandem there. There was a chemistry there that was not there when there was the supposed three-headed monster of Tate, West, and Crowell. I mean, this looked different. And physically, both looked really good. And, yep. and Duke Johnson really looked good. It's amazing when you see a guy come in for year two, and he gets, you know, proper diet, proper coaching, proper conditioning, and he comes in physically year two looking so much stronger than he did in year one.
Yeah, those guys both seem to be in very, very good shape, and you're right. It is nice to see that tandem working together and excited about everything. You talked about Believe Land. Just wanted to get your thoughts on it now that it aired over the weekend, and obviously you had a very prominent role in it.
Well, it's amazing to sit and watch it. I mean, that's it. You know, there are parts of it. I mean, the Ernest Beiner part of it was absolutely touching. I mean, and I remember that day so well. I mean, I was in Denver at Mile High Stadium when he played that game, and I was watching him throughout the second half and how he heroically brought them back. And he was really, he and Kozar were really the only reasons that they were back into that game, because they were just totally outplayed in the first half. And then to have that happen was just heartbreaking when it happened. It's heartbreaking to watch it again. And it's truly heartbreaking to realize how deep an effect that has had on him, you know, personally through the years. Because it's amazing. This guy went on and won a Super Bowl and was a big part of a great team in Washington that won a Super Bowl. And yet that one moment really haunts him.
Yeah.
And that's how much he loved playing for the Cleveland Browns. And he really, and to this day, I mean, you know, it has really affected his life, and it's something that he had to battle with and try and deal with, and it was a struggle for him, even though he went on. It's not like he, you know, he never was the same after the fumble. He was even better after the fumble, but he could never get the fumble out of his mind. That, I mean, just to go back and watch the whole thing, the thing that I know people say, it's tough to watch because it's heartbreaking and everything like that. I think you might have to take another look at it and say it's beautiful to watch, because through all of that, the passion that
remains.
You see in the whole city with all of the franchises really should put a smile on your face. That's what makes it such a precious sports city.
I agree. And look, I've lived in Cleveland now 15 years. So yep. I've seen some of the things that were chronicled. I obviously wasn't around for the Browns part of it, but certainly I remember when they were up 3-1 against Boston and that in baseball, and Joel Skinner had the stop sign at third, and that was a very pivotal moment, which didn't even make it into Cleveland. But, you know, I grew up watching Joe Montana. I've seen championships. You know, you see these teams around the league in the NFL, baseball, basketball, where they haven't had one. I truly believe that there is no potentially bigger sports story, feel-good moment, or city movement that would come than the Browns winning a Super Bowl. I think it would transcend everything.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off there, but I remember when Jimmy Haslam first came to town, and we had a chance to sit down and do an interview with him. And, you know, he certainly knew about the history of the Browns. You can do that. You can go to Wikipedia and you can read all of that and everything. But I remember saying what you just said to him, saying, hey, listen, when this thing does turn around and when the Browns win, and if they go all the way to the top and win, I think it will be one of the great sports stories in many decades.
For sure.
Yeah, ever.
Maybe ever. I mean, maybe ever. I don't even know if Cleveland would know what to do. And that's one of the reasons that I get excited to come do my job every single day. And I want to do it at a high level because I want to be here when that happens. I've been here for 4 years now doing this show when it hasn't been so good. But to do it when the Browns are – and for you, I mean, you're in your dream job to be able to call this team all the way through would be unbelievable. I don't even know if I could comprehend what it would be like. I don't think anybody could. I think it would be bigger and better – than any expectation.
It would be amazing. It would really be amazing.
Yeah, we need it. We deserve it here in Cleveland.
We do.
Hopefully this is the beginning of that turnaround that they keep talking about, and the Browns can climb that mountain one time because it sure would be sweet. Jim, always appreciate your insights. Thanks for being with us, and enjoy the rest of a very lovely day here. What a difference a week makes. It was snowing on Sunday morning.
Unbelievable. You're right. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, Jim. Thank you very much. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850 at 2:30. We'll hear from those guys that he referenced. A nice segue there from Mr. Donovan, Isaiah Crowell, and Duke Johnson, who took the podium together. Gibbs, before we take this break, I do want to ask you, do you think if the Browns won a Super Bowl that it would just, like, would it be unlike anything that's ever been seen in sports?
Yes.
I think so, too, because I really feel in my heart right now the Cavs are winning the NBA title. And I think everybody's going to be fired up, and it's going to be amazing. But I think
nothing's going to
going to compare.
No.
It is a Browns town.
It is a Browns town.
I mean, it is at the end of the day. And it's great to have the Cavs, and I hope they go out, and I hope they win it. I think it's going to be so much fun. But, man, I can't wait for the day. Even if the Browns were just a playoff team every year, I think this city would be beside itself.
Yes. Agree.
Ugh. Please. Let's make it happen. Hugh world order. We'll be back with more.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Nick Smith tweeted us, if I get to hear Jim Donovan call the Browns winning the Super Bowl someday, I'll cry guaranteed. You and me both, brother. I'll be crying right there on the sideline. That would be something. I bet people, those who like to make videos of me and set them to popular songs after that, I'll give them some good ammunition on the sideline in that Super Bowl if the Browns win.
Yes, for sure.
Oh. I don't even think I could actually comprehend it. I don't think I could comprehend what it
would be. Should we fill the audience in on the discussion we had during the break?
Which one?
We were typical Browns fans trying to pick and choose what city we'd rather go to.
Yeah,
I would rather not go to Minnesota. That's all I said.
I don't know. That stadium's going to be pretty tight, man.
It is going to be
Mall
great.
Mall of America, bro. Come on.
I'm just saying. Like Miami,
that whole
LA,
city's Wi-Fi,
Scottsdale.
Too.
Miami.
Yeah.
No, Miami Stadium is a
dump.
What do I care about the state? Gibbs was talking about we would get to be there for a week ahead of time, so that's why the city played a bigger role for me. That's what I was talking about. The game could be played in a sandlot where Scotty Buckeye is scouting fourth graders. I don't care.
I didn't think it's a very selfish take.
Wow.
What? I mean, we have Jim Donovan talking Believe Land.
Dude,
we're talking Browns Super Bowl,
anywhere.
Which has never been.
Yeah.
And then now you want to be able to pick the city that it's played in.
I don't really care where it's played. Like I said, Scotty Buckeye could be in attendance with fourth graders. It doesn't matter to me.
Scouting fourth graders. On his tablet.
Yes. I just have submitting him to youth1.com. I mean, it would be amazing. So, and Gibbs and I were talking about this. So people in Cleveland, Gibbs, would still be able to hear Donovan call that game.
Yeah, I might be wrong on this, but I believe because we've actually talked through every scenario that you can talk through running the radio network stuff. It would be able to be heard here in Cleveland on the flagship stations, which is ESPN 850 and 92.3 The Fan.
And streamed, I'm sure.
No.
No?
The affiliates would have to take the Westwood One broadcast.
Let me tell you something. If that ever happens and the Browns do win the Super Bowl and Jim gets to call that, that should be saved and then podcasted for everybody that wants it. Because I can only imagine how many times I would watch the Browns Super Bowl winning game. I mean, I think people in Cleveland would watch it over and over and over and over.
We watched the Browns opening day game at Pittsburgh from 1989 over and over. It was 51-0.
You guys will watch Believeland. I'm just saying, a fan who has lived it will watch it over and over and over again like a good movie. So you would imagine that's going to be like, you know, the wife erases clears out the DVR space and they've got the Super Bowl saved.
Oh, it's going to be there forever.
Yeah.
Forever. So I watched it last night. I finished it last night after the Warriors-Thunder game.
You're up late,
and
man.
And I just came to the conclusion that the Browns have got to do it. I mean, they've got to do it. At some point, they have got to win for this city because for everybody who has gone through all of the heartache that Clevelanders have gone through, and for everybody that is stuck with this team, and I truly believe by far the best fans in the NFL are here in Cleveland because of the loyalty, the passion. I mean, the fact that we're doing this show for a franchise that has not delivered in the results column forever, and people are still fired up, and every year they want to believe, and they're optimistic. And I think this year was the best reason to be optimistic that they've had in I don't even know how long, certainly since I've been here, that to deliver that to this city and those people would be it's almost an obligation. I mean, it's that's why I think, you know, the guys who are working in this football department, and I've talked with some of them about it and who have watched Believeland, they want it so bad for this city, for Cleveland, for the dog pound, as much as they do for themselves. Because you, when you get into this job, you're a competitive person and you want to have that success. But when you get a sense of what people went through and you see Ernest Biner, the raw emotion when he looks into the camera and apologizes, to give that back would be, man, unbelievable. I remember I did get goosebumps even just thinking about it last night. It would be unbelievable for this team to give that to this city and for this city to get to experience that winning the Super Bowl. Because I think, you know, there's nothing – NBA titles are great. World Series are great. The fact of the matter is in the world that we live in right now, the NFL is king. It is the king of the jungle by the biggest margin perhaps in the history of pro sports.
And again, I understand what football is, but how do you think that it has something to do with one game on one day instead of four games in, you know, out of seven days?
Yeah.
Just like taking the steps on the ladder.
Here it is.
That's
tonight.
That's what I mean.
You're either winning
one
the Super
shot
Bowl.
Deal. It's 50. And then I walked into Jerry World knowing, you know, I didn't, and it took outsider to give me that perspective. Is like, you know, someone saying, hey, you're going to walk into the stadium, you're going to walk out as disappointed as you probably have ever been in your life, or you're going to walk out a champion.
Yeah. And that's why.
And like, who wouldn't take 50-50 odds?
That's why going to game two of an NBA finals, while unbelievable and exciting,
awesome,
cannot compare to game seven of an NBA finals.
No.
They're both finals games.
Right.
They count the same.
Or a clincher at home. If you're able to do it, it's in six.
Can't compare.
It's cool.
That's what is so great about Super Bowl. It is literally
one
two
shot
teams
deal.
Are walking in, both expecting to win with everything, and then both prepared to the max, focused, wanting to perform at their best. Can you, A, perform your best under the pressure of that scenario? But at the end of the day, you know, 53 are walking out, Super Bowl champions and somewhat immortalized, and 53 are walking out probably never feeling worse in their professional sports career.
Right.
Only one of 32 teams is winning Super Bowl every year. Yep. 31 other teams are all in the same boat, and I guess it certainly is better to be the Bengals.
Of course, but I mean, look at the number of franchises that have never won a Super Bowl. You know, there's been 50 of them. Okay?
Yep.
You look at the I mean, just to name a few, you know, Packers have a number of Super Bowl victories. The Broncos have a number of Super Bowl victories. The Patriots, of course, have a number. You know, they make up, you know, teams that have won it multiple times. The Ravens, you know, have won multiple Super Bowls. So there's outsiders looking in that we're not alone in our conversation, and we believe we've seen the lowest low, you know, having been so close as documented in Believeland, having lost our team and now come back and live through the last 16 years, 17 years. There's no one that's got a story like us, and that's why, as you said to Jim Donovan, that it will make for the best sports story ever when
that
happens.
I really think it would be. I believe that. If somebody thinks that there is a bigger sports story than that, and I know that, you know, there was the curse of the Bambino with the Red Sox, but the Cubs, and while that would be huge, Chicago's had the Bears, it's had Michael Jordan, and it would be a big story. But, I mean, there are two baseball teams in Chicago, for crying out loud.
Right.
There's the Cubs and the White Sox. I just, man.
Blackhawks have won a bunch of NHL Stanley Cups.
And I think it would be great. I just don't think that there's anything. I mean, just look at the way the media coverage of the National Football League. It's every day, 365 days a year.
I mean, just look at the way that our local reporters cover the Cleveland Browns. Because it's not because they have jobs. It's because they need to meet a need, which is our fan base, the dog pound that is waiting on every letter or word of an article or, as we're going to hear here shortly, the words that come out of our players' mouths.
Yeah.
To build the new belief towards 2016.
Getting excited. Now let's go. 15-1. Come on. All right. When we come back, we'll hear from the two young running backs who have formed a great bond and also earned the trust of the coaches and personnel staff of the Cleveland Browns, Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson, at the podium next.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Let's go to the podium and hear from Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson.
Both of you guys, you've seen how Hugh Jackson has used running backs in Cincinnati. Are you kind of excited to see how they'll use you guys this year?
I am. I know I am, especially just seeing the way he used them in the past and just splitting them out wide and just using, I mean, getting the best out of them and using their strength in every way he can. So I'm excited to see. We off to a good start already, but I'm just happy to see how far and how in-depth we go with turn of the offense.
How did you guys feel that when they were drafting all these wide receivers and everything, they weren't touching the running back position?
You know, that's just a confidence booster. I feel like me and Duke both, you know, got what it takes to, you know, be a big threat on this level. So, you know, really, it just showed me that he had great confidence in us. So, you know, we just want to go out there and give him all we got.
Isaiah, the way the season ended last year with you guys running the ball very effectively the last two or three games, did it just make the whole season even feel weirder? Because, like, where was this all year?
Yeah, it was like that. You know, I wish we could have had more of that, you know, during the whole season. But, you know, we are to a good start now. Just got to erase the tape and move forward. So, you know, I feel like, you know, he will do a better job. So I'm just happy about that.
You feel like you can give him kind of like the Bernard Hill combo that Hughes enjoyed in Cincinnati?
We're here to give him whatever he wants. I really don't have a name for it, just whatever he wants, split out, run the ball, whatever coach wants, that's what we're here for.
Hughes talked about the importance of the running game, especially in this division. He knows the division well. how excited are you guys about that? How eager are you to really get the running game back on track? Because last year we know that it was missing for a while, and then at the end of the season you guys finally kind of found something.
Got it.
Well, I'm very excited about it because I know Hugh likes to run the ball, and you know, I feel like running the ball is a, you know, very important factor in, you know, winning and losing. So I feel like, you know, well, I'm just basically happy about it.
Has Hugh sat down with you and told him what he likes about your game and what he expects out of you?
Well, he actually called me on the phone before we actually met, and, you know, he told me he had been watching film, and, you know, he see my strengths and he see what I need to work on. And since we've been back, you know, when we out on the field, he just, you know, try to communicate with all of us and, you know, just help everybody get better.
Duke, after your rookie season, obviously a lot of catches, and you're among the leaders for backs, catching the ball on the backfield. In year two, what do you want to add to your game, or what do you want to do better?
Everything, basically. There's a lot of opportunities I had last year that I didn't make that I want to make sure I capitalize this year on, both running the ball and receiving. But my main thing is always protecting the quarterback first, something we preach a lot here, just making sure that we do our job far as protection, then we get on our route, because protecting the quarterback is the first thing. And that's basically it.
I know Isaiah called it a confidence booster that they didn't draft any running backs, but before the draft, were you guys, both of you guys, were you worried at all that they'd bring in a guy at number eight or wherever, and that you wouldn't know exactly where you stood?
For me, not really, because I played college back at the University of Miami, and it's doggy dog. We don't really look who's coming in. We don't really look at who's transferring in or who's coming from high school. We play football. That's the only thing we know. That's the only thing we knew since we was kids. Play football, and we compete and work hard. And at the end of the day, if we would have brought somebody in, we would have got each other better at the end of the day.
Coach, you look bad. What do you think you could have done better last year? Did you leave yards out there on the field?
I feel like I missed a lot of opportunities last year, running the ball and, you know, pass protection, catching the ball out of the backfield, you know, everything. And I feel like I want to do better in all phases this coming up year.
When you say you missed opportunities, like specifically, like were there holes you missed?
Holes I missed. Might have missed a protection, gave up a sack or on the quarterback. And, you know, I want to be better at all of those things.
Not only did they not draft a quarterback, but what Hugh just recently said, you guys are as good as he's, you know, seen in a while. He's really excited about you guys, and he says your
talent
is extensive. I mean, how excited is it to work for a coach like that that's so excited about you guys?
I mean, it's very exciting. Crow called a confidence booster. I just say he have a lot of confidence in us, period. Just knowing that we're going out there and get the job done. We both two young guys that he have a lot of trust in, and knowing that we're gonna go out there every day and give our all and do our job, and he's willing to put it all bet it all against with us, just because he knows our work ethic, he knows that we're gonna do whatever it takes, and we got his back.
A couple thousand yard seasons for
you guys this
year. We'll see. Yeah, hopefully.
Hey Duke, obviously last year you were training to come here, went through the whole draft process. Now that you got a chance to catch your breath, what did you do like in the off season to kind of get yourself ready for this year when you didn't have to do all the interviews and all that stuff?
I trained, but I was in school, so student the day, and by night I was training. So I had a pretty tough off season, and when I actually go back in June, I'll be back in school. So just training and going back to school is my main thing right now.
You're finishing up your degree?
I am, because I left as a true junior.
In what?
I'm sorry. Sports administration.
How close are you?
I'm some years off, just because I probably be able only to go once a year, take classes once a year, and that's during the off season. So, I mean, every year I'm working towards it, though.
Why was that so important to you?
Because I know this game of football doesn't last forever, and I always wanted to be a coach of some form. And I know after the season, especially with going through the NFL, you learn a lot and you see a lot. And I know that's something that I need to complete my life dream is being a football coach.
Maybe
maybe each of you guys want to comment on it a little bit, but just the, what's the main difference from the previous offense to this one for you guys in terms of, you know, running style and what you guys are asked to do?
I feel like we have a lot of different runs, and I also feel like just, you know, him demanding, you know, to run the ball violently and, you know, just demanding that we're going to run the ball and we're going to, you know, capitalize when we do it. So that's what I feel like the main difference is.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. That was Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson. Two guys we're excited to see on the football field this year carrying the rock for the Browns. When we come back, if there are any questions in our mailbag, we'll answer those as well as wrap things up here on this Thursday edition of CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Let that roll a second there, Gibbs.
Got to, baby. It's game two now. It's
time
to focus.
Game two tonight. We haven't talked about it. Oh, yeah. Why? Cavs win. Spoiler alert.
Come on.
Spoiler alert.
Here, here's my, here's
that game
my, here's
is
going to
be much
issue.
Closer than y'all think tonight.
I really feel like when it comes to the Cavs are the only team that can beat the Cavs as far as the Eastern Conference goes.
Okay? Who is?
The Cavs. Correct. We've already mowed through the first two rounds. To me, watching the Toronto Raptors, even against the Miami Heat, things had to go really well for them. You know, and it took Kyle Lowry and DeRozan to both play to play well together for them to be able to clinch that win and move on to play the Cavaliers. Us just flat out being lazy and not hungry is the only way the shots will fall. They don't just go in and not go in. They're professionals. So, and I love what I saw in the way in which we beat the Atlanta Hawks with the three-pointers raining. And then all of a sudden, LeBron at one point, 7 for 7, 9 from 9, and he has an average of 1.3 feet from the basket. It's amazing.
If he would have played like this when he was young, could you imagine?
No.
You know what's crazy that really struck me when I was watching Believeland? I texted the kid this. LeBron was drafted in 2003. LeBron James was drafted in 2003.
Same year as I was drafted.
And it's 2016, and we're hoping still for his first title in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, how crazy is that? Did you realize? I mean, you forget how long he's been playing.
Yeah. Well, not really. What the reminder to me was, when I saw the graphic come up about all-time playoff points and probably in the finals at some point, he'll move up to third. And at some point, possibly in the finals, he'll move up to third in assists. You play a lot of basketball and a lot of playoff basketball to be top five in points and assists in all-time playoff history.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll keep him.
Pretty.
I'll keep him good. And I really believe the same way that Hugh Jackson will extend the careers of some of our vets, I think Tyronn Lue, Kyrie Irving under contract, and Kevin Love under contract. And I mean, not saying I don't love any of the other pieces around those two guys and what Kyrie's been able to do, you know, in series here or there, you know, going 30 plus multiple nights in both series or darn close 27 plus. LeBron doesn't have to be a 32-8-6 guy every night, like he had to be on the Heat teams and even the prior Cavs teams.
I think he likes it. I don't think he likes being that guy.
He doesn't.
I think he prefers to be more like Magic.
Yeah, he does. I agree.
It's great. Yeah. Channing Frye.
Easy baskets. I mean,
Bear Down, Arizona. Thank you. Channing Frye, Arizona Wildcat.
Yeah. So no one in Cleveland knows Bear Down, Arizona.
I do. John Russell, if he's listening, does.
Who's John Russell?
Thank you.
My boy.
The same. Is he in Game of Thrones with the other? He's just vertically challenged actor.
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
No, he's just a man like
him. I wouldn't know.
He's just a man.
Love
it. Just a man. The other guy's half a man.
They call him Half Man, believe it or not, in Game of
Peter
Thrones.
Peter Dinklage?
That's what one of the things they call him.
I must have caught
he
it.
He leads them to a
I
victory.
I must have caught a promo at some
he
point.
He leads them to a victory, and they hoist him up in the air and chant Half Man.
Did they throw
Half
him
man.
Twice as high as a regular human?
This is ridiculous.
I don't know if we can keep talking about this.
Gibbs, Cavs. I mean, right until they lose, I'm going with, I think 16-0 is a possibility. What I can't believe, though, after about all of this is, if you go to 538.com and you look up...
Is there an eighth grader playing hoops that the Cavs are going to sign?
No, but you look up like ESPN's 538, the odd, Nate Silver still thinks that the odds for either the Warriors or the Thunder to win are 70%.
No one's taking them seriously because according to everybody else around the NBA, the Cavs haven't played anybody in the playoffs. That spread tonight is at 13. That could be a sucker bet. That's, Vegas wants you to take that.
To win the title. Here's what it says, to win the title. And this is, they're factoring in that the Cavs are basically getting to the finals. Cavs have the best shot of any team of getting to the finals, 84%. They have a 28% shot of winning the title. They think the Warriors have a 45% shot and the Thunder have a 24%. Now, again, once one of those teams is eliminated, I don't believe that, for example, all that 24% goes right to the Warriors. And the Warriors now are at, you know, 70%.
No.
I think it is more likely that the Cavs, I think it's more likely that the Cavs go 16-0 through the playoffs.
Stop.
Than get swept in the finals.
Well?
Cavs are not getting swept in the finals.
No.
So but they are also not going 16-0.
Correct.
Listen, they play like this. It's hard to tell, though. We're playing against some JV teams. No offense to Cam from Canada's squad from up north.
Yeah.
They just don't have the talent.
They don't.
They just don't have the talent.
We have the three best players on the floor from
either team. Yes, and that's where it's unfair. Now, when you play the Warriors, that's not going to be the case.
But can you say, okay, Steph Curry may or may not be the best player on the floor. Okay, whatever.
Yep.
But do the Warriors have anybody tucking in ahead of Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love?
It just depends on your flavor. I think there are people who would take Draymond over Love, and there are some people that think Clay's on Kyrie's level.
See, to me, I think Love and Tristan merged together are Draymond, and we got two guys to make their one. And I like the minutes. I like the 12 fouls.
They don't have Channing Frye. The one thing they do have is Iguodala, though, who guards LeBron very effectively. Anyway, it's going to be fun to see. And the Cavs should rock. Have a good
time
tonight.
Thanks to Jim Donovan.
Yes, of course. Thanks to Jim Donovan for being with us. Be sure if you're going downtown, go to Barrio. Tell them we sent you.
Yes.
Say CBD sent us.
CBD sent
us. We want jalapeno margaritas and we want tacos. Very solid special of the month right now. Special taco of the month as well. Okay. Just FYI. And a great featured queso. Jalapeno tomato. All right. We've got to go. That's all for us. We'll wrap up the week tomorrow here. On Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.